The service station was built eventually, and I don't think it was over Mrs. Delgado's dead body.
When and why did you leave Doug Anthony?
Oh, he left me, really. No, he decided, you know, he was going to resign. And I don't know whether I mentioned before, did I? We were at a he invited all the staff to a Christmas function at their house. They were living at Kingston then. And we all went along, had this nice dinner and so on, and then he walked out to the car with Claire and I when we were going home, and he said, "Would you come back in tomorrow morning and see me?" And I said, "Oh, yes, we'll come in," because we were sort of awake all night wondering what was going to happen. Well, it was dawning on us what was going to happen. We came back in the next morning, and he just said, "Oh, well, I want to hang my boots up." And that was it. So I think I might have told you this before, did I?
Yeah, I think so, on the first
session. But that was what it was. He said he remembered his father sitting on the back benches, sick, and you know, he said he determined he wasn't going to do that himself. He was going to get out, you know, while he still had his health and so on.
And then for you, was that a major?
I worked for 2 or 3 months for Ralph Hunt, who was minister at the time. And meanwhile, I was sort of looking around, you know, to see what else I could do. I finished up and I did a bit of work for, it was called Eric White's Eric White and Associates. It was a public relations firm. They've got a different name since, I forget. And I did a little bit of casual sort of work for them. But then I went to work for the Law Council of Australia. And I was there for 13 years until I retired.
And again, you wrote many speeches. That was part of
Yes. I had to write speeches for the president of the council, and there were 13 of them while I was there. I wrote speeches for all of them. It was very nice. One lady who was the president told my wife that when I wrote a speech for her, she just felt as if she'd written it herself. Mm-hmm. You know, she felt as if it was her words. Mm-hmm. I thought it was quite nice of her to say that. Yes. Yeah.
Did you keep in touch with Doug Anthony, or he keep in touch with you during those years?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we've always kept in touch by phone or these days emails occasionally. It was interesting. He rang up. He and Margot were in Canberra 4 or 5 months ago for a few days, and he rang up and said, "Oh, come and have dinner with lunch. Come and have lunch with us." So we had lunch at the National Library, and I said, "I've got to talk to a Probus Club in a couple of days' time." I said, "I'm going to talk about the time I spent on your staff." I said, "Do you want to come along and hear what I'm going to say about you?" And I was sort of hoping he'd say no, but he said, "Oh, yes, I'll come." So I picked him up and took him to this meeting. It was a men's Probus Club. They were delighted, of course, that he turned up. And three of his old trade department people were there. And so they were pleased to see him, and he was pleased to see them. So it was a lovely occasion. Mm. He hasn't been well, of course. He had some electrical problem with his heart. It's the kind of thing where they put a thing in through your groin and put it up through the arteries or whatever and do some operation. He had that done. And, of course, since then he's had bowel cancer. But he had the operation, and he was on chemo, and he's that was 4 or 5 years ago, and he says he's fine, he seems fine. So that's great.
Yeah. I'm going to ask about how you feel about this building, but is there anything else you'd like to reflect on to do with your time with Doug Anthony here?
There was one thing that I remember. There was an organisation called the League of Rights, which was reputed to be... They seem to have strange economic theories, but they're also reputed to be anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, and which they disputed. But they somehow or other, they seemed to infiltrate the Country Party some years ago, and there was a lot of League of Rights influence in the Country Party branches. They used to get stuck into him, and you know, took up a lot of our time. responding to correspondence from League of Rights members and so on. They wanted the government to print money. They said that was the answer to all the problems. The government's, you know, the banks don't make the money or provide the money. They should just print the money, you know, as much as required. He had a lot to do with developing closer economic relations with New Zealand, and that the negotiations went on for some years, and eventually there was an agreement between the two countries, and it was sort of ratified after Doug had gone into opposition and Bob Hawke was the Prime Minister. And I remember Bob Hawke very graciously gave him the credit for it when he talked about it in Parliament, which was very nice of Hawke to do that. There was a fellow named Neil Curry. I think Sir Neil Curry he might be these days. He was a Deputy Secretary in Trade, and he was in New Zealand with Doug on one occasion at one of these negotiations. And Neil, I wasn't there, but Neil told me that at the press conference afterwards, Doug was asked a question, and Neil said, when I heard the answer he gave, he said, I bit clean through the stem of my pipe. He got such a shock at what Doug had said. But I've sort of used this story a lot to illustrate the fact that most politicians evade, they've got a reputation of evading questions and not answering the questions. I said, Doug didn't do that. He would answer the question he was asked, and sometimes he would answer questions he hadn't even been asked. And you know, he used to get into all sorts of trouble as a result of that. But he was a very frank sort of a fellow. There was the thing, when they went into opposition in 72, there was a controversy developed that became all very public over which office Anthony was going to occupy in this building. And he immediately moved into the office that was formerly occupied by the deputy leader of the opposition. And I think it had been Artie Fadden's office at one stage too. And Doug argued that he believed he was the second most important person in the opposition as leader of the country party, ahead of the formal deputy leader of the opposition, who I think was Phil Lynch at the time. And this became quite a thing in the media. You know, they made a big fuss of this argument between Anthony and Lynch. It wasn't much of an argument, really. But I think the point they all missed was that what Doug was doing by claiming he was the second most important person in the opposition was staking out his claim to entitlements and staff and things like that. And I think that's really what it was all about. You were going to ask me about my feelings about this building.
Yes, if you've got no further comments on the period with Doug Anthony, then...
I've sort of got mixed feelings. Because I've been here quite a lot since that time, when I was at the Law Council. Pardon me. I went to the Law Council in 84. When was this building opened? 88, was it? The new building.
The new building, 88.
Well, I would have been coming here for several years to see people and so on behalf of the Law Council. So I've been back quite a lot. And as I mentioned, I told my little granddaughter once there should be plaques on the wall in various places saying the grandpa sat here at one stage. It's funny, you know, whenever I visualise Parliament, even if I'm watching it on television, I visualise it in the chamber of the old house here, not in the new place, because I spent so long here, I suppose, it's sort of ingrained in my brain, and that's the way I always imagine it.
But what words come to mind to sum up how you feel about your time here, your work here?
Well, I suppose opportunity. It was a wonderful opportunity that suddenly came my way out of the blue, and it really changed our lives. You know, we were sort of expecting to spend the rest of our lives in Lismore, just living quietly there and working for the local newspaper and so on, and we suddenly found ourselves here in Parliament House. And it was an enormous change for us, and quite scary, you know, for a young bloke from the bush. and I wondered whether what I'd learned at Bexhill Primary School and just a little two-room school and then at Lismore High School would be sufficient to get me through this sort of work. But I seemed to survive somehow and finished up, spent more than, well, over 19 years here working with Doug.
It's unfortunate we don't really have time to talk about your extensive travels.
Yes, they were very extensive.
You could spend hours, I'm sure, talking about the travelling you did as part of the job.
I think I went to 27 countries, some of them a number of times, like Japan and America and Britain and so on. The thing that always struck me about Doug and Margo was I thought they were terrific ambassadors for Australia. I remember we went to Tokyo once and we were there for a few days and there was a young couple from the Foreign Ministry, I think, who sort of looked after them. And as Doug and Margo said goodbye to them and were getting onto the plane, this young couple was in tears. And I thought that sort of says a lot about the Anthonys, you know, the way, the effect they had on people that they met all around the world.
When you come back to the building, like today and last week, how do you feel about it? What's your emotional response to it?
Oh, I can't say that I have much emotional response. But as I said, you know, I continue to come here quite a bit after I left, after I'd finished working for Doug. So it's nice to come back and see the old place.
Yeah.
And I've been to a couple of things in the chamber. One was when Bill, the chairman of the council now, Bill, the Actifier.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't matter. He launched the book that about Doug's father, mm-hmm. Doug's father's letters from Gallipoli and England and so on. And came on another night when a local historian fellow, can't think of his name, but he was talking about the crash of the Hudson bomber out near Queanbeyan in 1940 when the three ministers were killed and the chief of the general staff. And Sir Richard Kingsland, who of course was secretary of the Department of the Interior when I first arrived, he was there, and I knew that he had trained with the pilot of the Hudson in the 1930s at Point Cook in Victoria. And I said, why don't you get up and tell us about that? He said, oh, no, I don't want to do that. I said, well, I'll dob you in. He said, well, that'd be the way to do it. So when question time came, I said, we're very fortunate to have with us Sir Richard Kingsland, who trained with the pilot, and I'm sure he could tell us a few things. So Kingsland got up and told us some interesting stories about Hitchcock, the pilot of that plane.
Would you like a closing word to finish off the interview?
Only to say that I think it's a great thing that you're doing this. You sent me the other day a little extract from an earlier interview that had been done some years ago. Fred Johnson.
Worked here in the mid-20s on the boarding site.
That's right. I listened to that with great interest, made a little comment on it, as you suggested.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's very important. I love all this sort of history. I spent a lot of my time going around talking to Probus Clubs and U3A and all sorts of charity groups and so on. I've got three, I think, talks this week. I've got the Probus Club tomorrow, something on Wednesday, and on Thursday I'm speaking at a thing over at the War Memorial. It's a Volunteers Week function they've asked me to speak at. But a lot of the stuff is about political history and military history, of course, because I'm a guide at the War Memorial, and a lot of local history. I've got two daughters who live at Jerrabomber, where we live, in Halloran Circuit. And one of the talks I give is about Henry Halloran, who was a very interesting fellow and who set out in the 1920s to develop a new town at a place which he called En Verona, which is at the back of the Hume industrial area out along the Monero Highway. It was killed off by the Depression and so on. But Halloran, a fascinating fellow, and things like that I love talking about and putting all this stuff together. So I've really enjoyed coming and talking to you, Barry. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to do that.
Thank you very much for cooperating.
It's a pleasure, great pleasure.
So thank you very much, Barry.
Good.